Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, April 7th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll visit an event that seeks to make prom more affordable and environmentally sustainable. This time on the Cannabis Report, we'll hear about the fate of a bill that would have protected legal cannabis use for workers. We'll also get an update on developments in Denver around public marijuana use. And food columnist John Lindorf will be in the Boulder studio this morning to catch us up on local food news. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. On today's edition, John Lindorf will stick around to host a call-in show. His guest will be Chef Daniel Asher, Ann Cure of Cure Organic Farms, and Andy Clark of Moxie Bread Company. At 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first we'll start with local and regional headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Aurora City officials fired reformist police chief Vanessa Wilson Wednesday. Wilson was hired in 2020 in the wake of the death of Elijah McClain. The young black man died after police put him into a now illegal chokehold and paramedics administered a heavy dose of a powerful sedative. Wilson's lawyers say conservative city council members who did not agree with her policy changes wanted to damage her reputation. Aurora City Manager Jim Twombly gave no specific reason for firing Wilson, but was under increasing pressure from the council. McClain's mother, Shanine McClain, told the Sentinel that the police department of Aurora, quote, has a history of killing people and justifying it with their rules. She was cleaning it up and they got rid of her, end quote. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser says the consent decree requiring police reforms in Aurora will continue with the next police chief. A federal judge ordered a renewable energy company to pay over $8 million in fines and restitution after at least 150 eagles were killed at its wind farms. The farms, owned by ESI Energy, are located in 8 states, including Colorado. ESI representatives pleaded guilty to criminal charges, which include 3 counts of violating the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Prosecutors say most of the eagles were struck by wind turbine blades. ESI is a subsidiary of NextEra Energy, one of the largest U.S. providers of renewable energy. Denver International Airport proposed a plan to allow Frontier Airlines to board and deplane passengers on the tarmac instead of through a jetway. The airport would spend over $180 million to expand a ground loading area in Concourse A. Denver-based Frontier would get exclusive use of 14 gates. Officials say ground boarding is more efficient and would save Frontier money. Passengers can load at 2 airplane doors simultaneously. That means more planes scheduled per day. If approved, the plan would commit Frontier to an unusually long 10-year lease. Jurors in Denver heard opening statements on a federal criminal conspiracy trial that is charging a CEO and company for non-poaching agreements. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
This unprecedented criminal conspiracy trial is the first time a CEO and company have been criminally charged for non-poaching agreements under the 132-year-old Sherman Antitrust Act. The Denver Post reports that the trial that started Monday and held in U.S. District Court for the District of Colorado and the proceedings and outcome are expected to resonate nationally. Attorneys focus on whether DeVita Incorporated's former CEO, Kent Thury, violated federal antitrust law when he agreed with 3 competitors not to recruit each other's workers. Prosecutors argued that the agreements were criminal and stymied competition, thus limiting DeVita's employees' ability to land new jobs and advance their careers. Defense attorneys admitted the agreements existed, but said they were not illegal, did not limit the free market, and in some cases increased competitive opportunities for DeVita employees. DeVita and Thury were indicted last year on 3 conspiracy counts. The indictment alleges DeVita and 3 other companies agreed not to actively recruit each other's employees at various times between 2012 and 2019. Thury had moved the headquarters of DaVita, one of the country's largest providers of kidney dialysis services, from El Segundo, California, to Denver in 2009. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Emergency crews were called in after a bus fell into a sinkhole in Boulder on Wednesday. Police say the bus hit a pothole after a water main burst at the intersection of Arapahoe and Commerce Streets. The broken pipe was about a foot in diameter and flooded the street. The six passengers on the bus were evacuated without injuries. The bus was towed out safely and the water had mostly receded by early evening. Boulder police closed westbound Arapahoe at 55th Street and are asking drivers to avoid the area. Colorado health officials announced Wednesday that 40 COVID testing sites will close in April. The remaining 80 sites will be able to administer about 26,000 tests per day. The state is winding down its pandemic response and hopes to shift COVID testing, treatment, and vaccinations over to typical healthcare settings. Colorado will continue to distribute home rapid tests. Another fire broke out in South Boulder yesterday. James Searfoss has more.
On Wednesday afternoon, a brush fire ignited near the North Fork of the Shanahan Trailhead, just south of the NCAR burn area. The Boulder Fire Rescue closed off all hiking trails in the area, which remained closed throughout the night. Boulder Fire Rescue brought the fire to 100% containment after only an hour, burning only 0.6 acres, according to a post sent out by Boulder Fire Rescue. Personnel from both Boulder Fire Rescue and the Boulder Open Space and Mountain Park Service will continue to monitor the area for any additional fires, including areas burned during the NCAR fire, where firefighters continue to monitor hotspots. For KGNU, I'm James Searfoss.
Gusty winds and critical fire weather will continue today, according to the National Weather Service. Red flag conditions are expected. Officials warn against burning or doing outdoor activities that might produce a spark. Even with the wind blowing, it should feel a little warmer today. In Boulder, sunny skies and a high near 56, wind gusts could hit as high as 33 miles per hour, evening lows around 30, and winds dying down a little to 21 miles per hour. In Denver, sunny with a high near 57, winds could gust up to 34 miles per hour, lows around 29 with wind gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. And in Fort Collins, sunny with a high near 56, much windier though with gusts up to 48 miles per hour, at night a low around 28 and wind gusts up to 36 miles per hour. Outside the Boulder studios, it's 28 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The end of the school year is a few weeks away, and for high school juniors and seniors, that means prom season. Tickets to the event can be pricey, as can be the formal wear required to attend. One volunteer-run effort is trying to make a dent in the latter by making prom dresses more affordable.
So we're just heading towards the pop-up shop where we have the 2,000 dresses set up by size 0 to size 24. And we have shoppers looking at dresses. We have volunteers in hot pink shirts.
Jessica Montour glides through a ballroom filled with clothing racks packed with women's formal wear. She's the president of the Prom Dress Exchange, an all-volunteer organization that puts on an annual event just before prom season.
So we have one ballroom set up just for shopping, and then we have this next adjacent ballroom set up with 36 dressing rooms so the girls can try on the dresses, because we all know that a hanger never does a dress justice.
The scene looks like it could be the backstage of a fashion show. High-energy music pumps out of a sound system as dozens of girls flit back and forth between clothing racks and dressing rooms. Montour says it takes about 100 volunteers to create and staff the event, held this year inside of the Adams 12 School District Administration Building.
All of these dresses have been donated, so they're mostly gently used dresses, although we do have dresses in our inventory that do have tags and have never been worn.
The event resells the dresses at thrift store prices, thereby significantly lowering the cost of attending prom. But Jessica Montour notes there's also an environmental benefit.
By trade, I'm a wardrobe consultant, so I work in the fashion industry. And the fashion industry is one of the top polluting industries in the world next to oil and gas. So we feel really good about being able to eliminate these dresses going into a landfill. Because typically with formal dresses, women and girls will wear them once. And so we're able to get these dresses into the cycle of life and recycle and reuse and repurpose the dresses, which is so important.
Among the buyers at the recent event in Thornton was Haley, an 18-year-old senior at the Academy.
I think it's really cool. I think all the girls are really nice, and I think it's a good thing that they're selling these for $10 each, and I think it's good for girls who, you know, can't afford some dresses, and especially because all of them are really cute, so...
And is there any kind of stigma associated with using a used dress for prom, or is it seen as the ecologically sound thing to do?
I think people, they don't really like, you know, the idea of having a used prom dress, but I think with all of these, you can't even tell. So I think it's a really good idea.
Haley picked out 4 dresses to take home with her. At the checkout table, Prom Dress Exchange volunteer and board member Hannah Maldonado adds up totals and fills out a spreadsheet with customer information.
We're asking first name, where they go to school, and what their grade is.
And what's more or less the breakdown geographically of students who come here?
Yeah, so we have kids kind of from all over the place, but definitely Adams 12, which is the building that we're in right now. We have some DPS kids. As well as some kids out from little mountain towns around. So,
and what is generally the reaction of people who are clients here? Do they know about it, or is this their first time?
Yeah, I think this is definitely most people's first time. We actually sent out emails to all DPS schools, all Adams 12 schools, and see if their schools would share the information. So we're just kind of getting a vibe of, you know, who they got the information from, and most of it is schools who are sharing the info, so...
3 hours into the event, around 80 families had come through, and about 200 dresses had gone out the door. The Prom Dress Exchange organizers say putting on the annual event is a major undertaking, and storage costs during the pandemic pause on proms have been high, making it more a labor of love than a mechanism for profit. For area residents who miss the Prom Dress Exchange, a similar event will take place this Sunday at the Longmont Public Library from noon to 2 p.m. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm Shannon Young. We'll be right back after this quick break.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hannah Lee Myers, and as always, I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker, who's here to bring us up to speed on a recent cannabis bill and the fate of that. And then we're also going to talk about public cannabis consumption.
Yeah, we'll start off by saying, you know, about a month ago, I think we talked about a bill that Representative Edie Hooten had put forward in the Colorado legislature that would provide protections for workers who use marijuana off the job and allow medical cannabis patients to use their medicine at work. And the measure was defeated by the House Business Affairs and Labor Committee because, of course, it has to go through committee before it actually gets out on the floor. And it had been watered down from its original intent to help patients using cannabis to one that would, they even rejected this. It would create a 15-member task force under the State Division of Labor and Employment that would convene in 2023 to study marijuana employment practices with a report due by the year's end. And that was rejected 1-12.
What I find interesting about this is that if Colorado's legalized cannabis use recreationally, really, it's only legalized that for people that don't work. And most people work, right? Who is that legalization that Amendment 64 brought forward for if it's not really protected as outside of work in any way?
You know, that's one of the things that happened. It just happened as a result of us being first. You know, we didn't see that. And when Houghton originally wrote the bill, employers could take no action against an employee for using medical cannabis, quote, on the premises of the employer during working hours. And patients that use medical cannabis or adult use marijuana when they're off the job. And this would have stopped that. But after receiving feedback from employment attorneys and workers' compensation officials, the lawmaker said that those interests, quote, would not necessarily lean favorably toward recommending any conditions under which medical marijuana use on the job would be acceptable to them. And again, it's just like you said. Lots of people use cannabis. The same people who use cannabis work, but we don't have any rules protecting them at all.
So there's the end of that conversation for now, I guess.
Yeah, in some better news, and this is on the Denver front, you know, one of the problems that's faced the industry since legalization, since 2012, has been figuring out how to allow people to consume cannabis in a public place. You know, it's just been a real difficult thing. Tourists come to Colorado, you know, to sample cannabis. Unless they're in a cannabis-friendly hotel, they have nowhere to go to use it. And Proposition 64 said treat marijuana like alcohol. And if you do that, then you have to have public places for people to consume. Right now, people are consuming, but they're waiting for the band to quit at the bar so they can go out into the parking lot and consume. And that's really what's going on. This has confronted every state that has legalized. There really is no states that have ever really done anything about it. And last week, the city of Denver announced that Tetra Lounge, which is located at 3039 Walnut Street in Denver, and it will be opening April 21, of course. it's the first social equity license approved by the city. About 75% of cannabis businesses are owned by whites, and the ACLU says that black people are nearly four times more likely to get arrested for marijuana possession than if you're white. And these ordinances were signed by Mayor Michael Hancock, and they're trying to change this little by little. Tetra Lounge still has some final inspections to complete with the city, but they expect to be open for public consumption within 2 weeks. And there are currently two other social equity applications that are still pending with the city. So there's two more coming. And the executive director of Denver Excise and Licensing said that they'll go through the same rigorous inspections and compliance operations as any other types of marijuana businesses to make sure they're operating safely. It's still a new model, and there's not a lot of places to look. So maybe once again, Denver will be the model for changes. And I'd like to also mention that the Patterson Inn, which is an old hotel, real old hotel, beautiful old building, it was refurbished by cannabis enthusiast and hotel owner Chris Chiari. And quote, it's the first licensed cannabis consumption lounge in a hotel. And they just obtained a provisional license from the city of Denver, which clears a licensing hurdle to operate a cannabis consumption lounge as an amenity to the Adjacent Hotel. I think that's real fascinating. I have no idea what they're going to do, but, you know, there's smoking restrictions. That's also made it kind of a problem, you know, because there are a lot of basic smoking restrictions in Denver. But the Patterson Inn's a beautiful old three-story building, and I'm eager to see what's going to happen to these licenses, and we'll continue to watch Denver's bid to allow people to use cannabis in controlled situations in public.
Yes, as the state works towards trying to truly make cannabis like alcohol, as Amendment 64 planned in the first part, there's clearly a lot of details that need to get hammered out to make that a reality. So thank you for keeping us in the loop there, Leland.
Yeah, we'll continue to watch this.
Much appreciated. For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
Time now for Radio Nibbles. John Lindorf is here to talk about saving money, cooking dinner tonight. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon. Today, you know, we're going to skip the news, controversies, all that kind of stuff. And Just focus on saving money. The price of ingredients is up incredibly high. And so we're going to talk about chicken. And if you read today's Nibbles column, boulderweekly.com, there's a whole series of tips. I'm going to try to run through them quickly. Focusing on chicken, I talked to a bunch of chefs and professionals. So the first thing is buy the whole bird, buy a big bird, not that big bird. And literally, you know, the bigger the bird, the better. It's like with a turkey. You're buying a lot of bone and other stuff, which is great for making stock, which is part of this. But so buy a good big bird and get the most out of it. So you roast the bird. You put herbs and vegetables in the pan and roast it and serve it as chicken dinner. Then you take all the meat off of it, put that aside. You boil the carcass with some vegetables. That gets you broth. If you boil it down, it becomes stock. And so you strain it. Make sure you save the chicken fat that floats to the top. Skim that off, put that aside. Put the broth aside, put the chicken aside. Okay? Now, you can take that chicken and put it inside a store-bought pie crust with some vegetables and some of that stock, and you instantly have a chicken pie. The other thing is you've got this stock, so take it and start simmering it. Add big white beans to it, all right? And then you cook those down, put it in a baking pan, and put some of the chicken on top with some vegetables and cheese, and suddenly that's dinner. That can be, you can serve these, those chickeny beans over toast. Call it bruschetta. You can also, if you cook the beans in the stock, you can puree them. And suddenly you have this bean spread. You can put that on top of toast, or you can use it in Mexican food. You can take the chicken and make chicken mole. There's like this whole series of things that you can do. The other thing is to, by all means, make soup. And one big thing about saving money when you're cooking is absolutely cook large. You know, if you're going to mess up the kitchen, and you will mess up the kitchen, all the dishes, all the pans, go large. Don't make anything less than a gallon of soup. And then divide it into small portions and freeze it. And then you pull it out and do something new with it. You know, whether it's turning it, you know, whether it's the stock or the soup. That means that you're ready to make chicken mole. If you have chicken mole concentrate, you can make chicken curry by Thai curry paste. Add it to that chicken stock. And suddenly you have this sauce that you can pour over the chicken. You know, the other possibilities are any other cuisine in the world that includes chicken. I mean, one thing I love is, you know, trying different kinds of grains. I really like farro, which is sort of a wheat relative, F-A-R-O. Very chewy and nice. Kind of like brown rice in that sense, you just, you know, because, you know, you're thinking of three things that are relatively inexpensive, and that's why you should buy good ones. You should buy a good chicken. There are good beans, good dry beans, which is much cheaper than using canned beans. Okay, there's a brand called Rancho Gordo, which are very sustainable.
Well, all those 12 different ways of cooking a chicken are available, boulderweekly.com. Right.
And if you have some fabulous money-saving tips, send them to nibbles@boulderweekly.com.
Yeah, we love those. So, John, what's the best thing you ate this week?
I went to a really cool place in Lafayette that I hadn't been to, Eats and Sweets. It's right on North Public. Right near the plaza.
Is that where they have the banana bread, like, ice cream sandwiches?
Banana bread, banana bread ice cream sandwiches. They also have really good soups, really nice folks, and cool baked goods. They make a great kind of poofy pie. It's like it's full of apples or pears or blueberries, and really quite good in a buttery crust. So Eats and Sweets in Lafayette. And I hope you stay tuned right now for a public affair. I'm going to be joined by three excellent food people from Boulder, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about food.
Yeah, and we'll be taking your calls at 303-442-4242.
So don't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Try a tomato plate too. Here's Cacciatore Dore. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food fills ya.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Steve Miller, Luis Licon, Alexis Kenyon, Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, Rosanna Longo-Better, and John Lindorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a public affair. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.